Welcome to Movie Dudes, episode 223. I am Jeff, joined as always by Chris.
Yes, that's me.
And we are here, and we have all the new movies. Like, we have two new movies that came out in theaters, like the two big movies, including Dr. Sleep, and a couple new movies on streaming. It's like Halloween never left us. We got some horror going this week.
Yeah.
But I guess before we get into any of the movies, it's worth talking about Disney Plus. It launched this week. I am not getting it just because, like, I can't really justify it to myself. Like, I don't know what I would watch. But you did.
I did. So you've
been able to check the app out.
Yeah.
I'm sure you've watched the new Star Wars show, The Mandalorian, or whatever it is.
Well, I watched the first episode. We can talk about that specifically because I like that it's not all there. It kind of gives, like, it's kind of like with Game of Thrones or any, like, weekly show, right? Like, you get that time after the episode and you can go talk with everybody and, you know, you speculate on what's going to happen next. And there's, like, this cool, like, feeling of community around it, as opposed to something like Stranger Things is cool, but by the time 4th of July rolled around, like, the discourse over that the entire season
was done.
Like,
everyone would just burn right through it. Everyone's doing their own speed, first of all. Like,
right.
So
either they don't want to talk about it or they just want to talk about, like, everything. And I also don't think that, like, I don't have any problem with binging shows, like, watching them straight through. Like, there's nothing wrong necessarily with, you know, consuming a piece of media that way. But to me, I like this feeling of, like, the Mandalorian episode, the first episode ends on kind of this big reveal. We're not sure what it is, but, like, if you are a fan of Star Wars, you will know a little bit about what you've just seen at the end, but it's not, like, you don't know, like, what it means, what impact this has. Like, it's something that, like, leaves question marks. And I feel like if I was able to jump right into episode two, like, that feeling of, like, shit, like, what is this? You lose that. And yeah, so, like, I've been having a good time, like, talking with people and, like, what is that thing? Like, what does it mean? Like, is it even important? Like, there's this cool feeling about, you know, releasing it one at a time. And I bounce back and forth on how I feel about that, but, like, at least for this and the way, you know, they ended it on a, you know, pretty big cliffhanger. I'm happy that I can, like, go and talk with people about it. And then, you know, tomorrow the second episode launches and then it kind of settles into a weekly rhythm until, you know, the eight episodes are done. But yeah, as far as Disney Plus is concerned, it's an okay app. So I've tried it on the Xbox.
Mm-hmm.
I have, which kind of resembles also the PC interface. I don't have an app for it on my computer, but, like, off the website. I've tried it on the phone. It's fine. It's if you've used Hulu, like, that's a way better interface. And it's surprising to me that they didn't adopt that interface. Especially being as, like, they're tying, like, you can tie your Hulu subscription into
your
Disney Plus subscription. So it's weird to me that, like, yeah, they didn't go that route. It's almost more, and Shudder has improved immensely since it launched, but it's still a little bare bones in the way it kind of delivers things. Like, your watch list is kind of, like, thrown off to the side. You have to dig to get to it. Same with like Disney Plus. Like, you have to go and, you know, your watch list is over here. It's not this, like, nice list of films like Netflix or Hulu. It's a kind of just, like, a jumbled mess in the order that you added them to your list, but it's like not necessarily conducive to finding what you want.
What about like in terms of like the stuff that they have on there? Like, have you browsed through like what's available?
Yeah. So, and that's a weird thing too, because they have, I think there's what, 10, there are currently 10 Star Wars films. They have 8 of them. They don't have The Last Jedi, and they don't have Solo yet.
Jedi is on Netflix, I think, so maybe that's waiting for something to end with that.
So they have a contract with Netflix. Their Netflix exclusivity on that runs out December 25th. December 26th, The Last Jedi will appear on Disney Plus. Solo runs a little bit longer. Their exclusivity runs somewhere into 2020. And same with some like Marvel films and other Disney movies. Like Coco is currently exclusive to Netflix. So it doesn't have the latest films, but it does have a good selection of just about everything else.
Lots of like old Disney movies and shit, like fucking like from the 50s and earlier even. Like,
There's stuff from like early Disney, like shorts too. Like,
like Steamboat Willie and shit like that. Right.
Which is really cool. Like you can see like these old Disney shorts, they have them all in a section. In fact, they have sections for like a lot of different shorts that like I didn't even know had been created. Like evidently there were like DuckTales shorts and shit like that, like that were made.
Yeah, just like real deep cut random Disney Channel shit and like
So if you're like into like some Disney animation and you know, some of the other Disney programming, they have a good amount of it. There's a lot in terms of original stuff. There's less. I mean, they're the Mandalorian's out there, and that's their kind of their premier show, I guess, for the service to start with. There's also like some High School Musical show, which I have no interest in, but I'm sure people are down with that. There's some other show called Encore, which I'm not really sure what that's about either. And then there's some like Disney original movies. Noelle starring Anna Kendrick, like a Christmas movie.
It's like a new Christmas movie.
Yeah. So I'll probably check that out. I like Anna Kendrick. Like, there's also in their kind of vein of doing live action remakes of their classic cartoons. The service kind of launched off with Lady and the Tramp, a live action version of that. So that forewent the theatrical release, but it's there on Disney Plus. And from what I hear, it's okay. Mm-hmm. I added it to my list. I'll watch it at some point.
I saw someone talking about some documentary that's on there too. There's one about a Disney parks even or something like.
Yeah, there. I think I added that to my list too. There's a couple of Disney documentaries. There's a Star Wars documentary. I think there's like a Marvel reality TV show or something like that. And they also have, I didn't know this, but evidently Disney owns National Geographic. Like a whole bunch of like, I know that they have like their yearly, like Disney does a yearly nature documentary around Earth Day. So all of those are there. But they also have like a whole bunch of like National Geographic documentaries and stuff too. So it's pretty thorough. Like there's all the Pixar films, you know, up until probably till Coco.
And so they have like the shorts as well, like the Pixar shorts.
All the shorts are there. You have a lot of the classic Disney movies. Even ones that like, you know, they have been hard to find because they've been in the vault. They're there on the service now. Other things like Fantasia and Fantasia 2000, which I found hard to find recently. They're both up there. You know, the ones you don't expect to be there because they've been hidden forever are not, like Song of the South, still not up there. Like, I wouldn't expect that either.
They do have some stuff on there. I saw some people posting that, like, some of the stuff has, like, disclaimers beforehand saying, like, this might have depictions that are, like, outdated or whatever, yeah, controversial now or whatever.
Yeah, it's like,
I think, what exactly?
Dumbo.
Yes, Dumbo. And then, so they present it the way it was.
Yeah. Like, they don't edit it. It's, it's just there. Funny enough, they did edit the original Star Wars again. Evidently Disney didn't do it, but
Lucas did it.
Lucas did it before he sold it, and that's the version that's up there. I don't know. I watched it yesterday. I didn't feel like it was egregiously fucked with any more than it had been previously. It is funny though. Like, people are like, what the fuck? They've changed it again. Like, oh, who cares, man? It's like, it doesn't do anything naturally to the film. So I get it. People want the original version of the movie, but this is fine. It doesn't hurt it. I do think adding McClunky when Greedo shoots is kind of funny, but and then somebody went through and added it to all the death scenes in Star Wars. Where right before they die, they yell McClunky. So people are having a little bit of fun with that. But yeah, I think it's a decent service. I think it's actually relatively cheap too, right?
It
it's
is. Like
$6.99 or something a month.
Yeah.
Which is probably the right price, being as, you know, it only has, you know,
Disney stuff. It's like, yeah, it's like, you know, Disney owns a lot of shit, and they, you know, they have a, you know, they've been around forever too. So they have like a, I'd be more interested in like checking out like the old Disney shit, like, you know, watching like The Rescuers or fucking,
yeah, that's on that. Yep.
You know, like the Shaggy Dog or Herb, like, do they have like that shit, like the Herbie movies and
weird shit? Like there, I definitely saw a Herbie movie on there. The Rescuers is on there. There were ones that, like, I wasn't expecting, like The Great Mouse Detective and The Black Cauldron.
Yeah,
that's a good one. Which are, you know, deeper animated cuts. Willow also on there. It's a film that's kind of hard to find, and it's one that they purchased when they purchased Lucasfilm. But there are some like notable weird misses though on the service. So I'm a huge Muppets fan. So I looked to like see what Muppet stuff they have, and they have like the, you know, the Muppet Movie. They have the Great Muppet Caper, the Christmas Carol, Treasure Island, then the two new Muppet movies. And then they have like the Muppets TV show from like a few years ago that was on ABC, but they don't have any of the classic Muppet stuff, like none of the original Muppet TV show stuff. They don't have
Muppet Babies.
They have Muppet Babies, but not classic Muppet Babies. It's like this new Muppet Babies, which is weird. So like, yeah, like I would want the original Muppet Babies. Like,
I used to watch that.
Where are the Fraggles? Like, I think Disney owns the Fraggles. Like, where's Fraggle Rock and that shit? And where is Muppet Family Christmas, which is like a huge favorite of mine, like that. And they're missing the Muppets Take Manhattan, which was the second Muppets movie, which is to me is a weird omission. Like,
yeah,
I mean, it could be, you know, they sing licensed music in some of that. So it might be a licensing issue, or maybe they sold the streaming rights out to a different company for a little bit. But yeah, there's some notable exceptions across all the series. And then there's also the issue of, like, it is definitely designed for, it's a family service.
Yeah.
So PG-13 is about as hardcore as it's going to get. So like, while Disney owns like all the X-Men stuff, something like Logan is never going to appear on here. Like,
yeah.
Deadpool not going to show up here. Like, they've said that stuff will stay like Hulu will be the place to watch that stuff. So, it's fine, and I am not upset with it. There's tons of stuff for me to dig through and watch, but
yeah,
mileage is going to vary.
Yeah, I'm intrigued, but like, I just sat there and I thought about it, and I was like, you know, I'm not like, I like Star Wars, but I'm not crazy, crazy Star Wars fan. I'm not like super into Marvel. I like Disney, but again, like, how much am I really going to dig through their old like movies? I don't know. Because I was just like, I don't know. I have like a billion fucking subscriptions as it is, so I don't have it as of yet. But like, I don't know. It's just like, I don't know. It's like a hot new thing. Like, you kind of want to check it out. Like, what is this?
Yeah, which is like what I told my wife. I was like, I need, because our Hulu account's under her login and credit card. And I was like, I need the login for the Hulu account. She's like, why? I need to get Disney Plus. She's like, do we really need another streaming service? Like, it's like, we already have Amazon Prime, we have Netflix, we have Hulu, Shudder, right? Like,
yeah, I got it. Yeah, I got it. Also.
And then I'm like adding this Disney one on, and like, I was like, well, I mean, there's a new Star Wars TV show. I need to watch that.
I think you are justified, and it's cheap. It's cheap enough that like I could see myself one day going, you know what? I'll get it. Like, but I just haven't.
I think we may have reached the point though, and I think I'm very much considering this with Netflix, where it's when they release a new series that I want to watch, I will subscribe. But like when I'm done with it, I will unsubscribe for whatever period of time.
You know what? That's how I feel about Netflix too. And every time I bring that up, I get yelled at by my girlfriend. She's like, no, I watch Netflix. I'm like, come on, when? Like, barely ever. Like, is it really? I'm like with you on Netflix. Like, that's the one where after The Irishman comes out, I kind of want to just.
I don't use it enough.
I don't use it at all. Barely, you know?
And like, honestly, the only reason I have Prime is because of like the deliveries, the 2-day, 1-day delivery. Like, the fact that it has a streaming service attached to it is fine, but that's not why I have that service.
It's nice one to have, I think, though, because like it does have a better selection of older movies than Netflix, I think, anyways.
Yeah, and you know, part of this is these are the new networks, right? Like Netflix is like, they're like ABC, NBC, CBS.
Yeah.
So like Amazon is creating their own content. So is you know, Netflix. So is Hulu and Disney in this regard. So if you want to watch these things, like you kind of need these things. These services, but I do think I'm getting to the point with some of them where it's like, I don't need you right now. Like, maybe after The Witcher comes out, I cut Netflix off until, you know, whatever the next big show I want to watch comes out for it.
Yeah, the only thing I'm looking forward to on Netflix is The Irishman. Basically, after that, I'd be good. But I guess I'm being told I have to keep it. I think the one I probably use the most, if I'm being honest, is Hulu. But that is also because I do the Hulu Plus Live.
Yeah, so that's my TV. Like, I watch sports through that, and like my
but Hulu HBO also has good selection of movies and
they do.
And they do have, like, you know, The Handmaid's Tale. Like, that's an original show that they do that I think is really good. So, but yeah, as for Disney Plus, I mean, I'm interested enough in it, but it's just I don't haven't pulled the trigger just yet. But it's fun to hear about what they have.
You might want to wait until like they have a couple shows that you want to watch, and then, you know, pay the $7 or whatever for a month and come in, watch them, and watch some of your classic Disney stuff, and then cut out till something else comes out.
Our one friend Matt subscribed to it like pretty much solely to go through The Simpsons, which I guess they have almost. I think they have almost every episode except the Michael Jackson one.
Okay.
But I did read that like they cropped that one weird or something. Like the aspect ratio wasn't right on it.
So it's evidently in widescreen instead, like in a letterboxed instead of a 4:3, which some of the, I guess the original, which makes sense. That show's been on since like before HDTV.
Yeah.
So they probably were not filming them in film. They were filming them in standard def and standard aspect ratio. So they've cut them for some reason into a letterboxed format, which is weird because it's not presenting the entire picture.
Not the right, yeah. Weird.
Yep.
That's a show where I would almost like want to like check out what some of the newer episodes are like, but it's just like anytime. I mean, I stopped watching it so long ago that there's got to be a couple at least good new episodes I've never seen on there.
Yeah. Before we move on, one more thing.
Yeah.
Talking about The Simpsons, which has like 1,000 episodes or something. I don't know. Yeah. Where we're at, really. But one thing that I did find weird about it is most of these streaming services, when you watch a series, it kind of keeps track of where you were, right? Like, you know,
yeah.
Episode 4, like I watched 3 episodes of Star Wars Rebels. Next episode's episode 4, you go to the Rebels page, and it's like, hey, do you want to resume at this?
Yeah.
Or do you want to do more? And this is like, it just brings you to the Rebels page. It doesn't tell you where your last episode was. I did see people saying that the app does not remember where you are if you like stop watching a movie halfway. That's untrue. So that might have just been opening day like problems with the server. It doesn't
keep track of your progress in a series or right. whatever.
Yeah, so it's a weird thing. And like when you get into a series like The Simpsons, which has, you know, 20 plus seasons, keeping track of where you are in that is important. Like it's not necessarily important for me with The Mandalorian because I'm watching them as they come out. But if you're trying to go through some of these older series that have longer season runs, it's going to become a little bit of an issue.
Yeah. So. All right. Well, that's Disney Plus. I'm sure I will have a few beers one night and decide that it's a great idea.
Yeah.
Speaking of great ideas, let's get into our big film for the week anyways, which is Dr. Sleep. This is a weird one for me to talk about, but let's try to explain what this is here. This is based on a Stephen King novel directed by Mike Flanagan, who's done a bunch of King now. He's kind of like the new Frank Darabont. He's like King's fucking go-to director.
Yeah.
So he's adapting Stephen King's novel, Dr. Sleep. And he had quite a task ahead of him here because it's a sequel to The Shining, but you know, King's novels and Kubrick's original Shining are like such different things. And so it's weird, like he's adapting this novel, but it is also a film, which makes it a sequel to The Shining film as well. If you get what I'm saying, it's just so
it's a hard thing to wrap your brain around, right? Because like the Shining book has a sequel called Dr. Sleep, which has nothing to do with what has happened on screen. Then, you know, Kubrick adapted that book to his classic horror film, The Shining. And there are changes to...
Major, major changes.
Yeah. Like thematic and character changes, too. In the way that is presented. And then, you know, Flanagan's Dr. Sleep is... It takes aspects of what King did in his novel, Dr. Sleep, but applies them against the film of The Shining. So this is a direct sequel to The Shining that Kubrick did.
And I think one, that is the right thing. Like, I don't think he could just adapt Dr. Sleep, the book, and just like ignore, like, Shining's a huge film, like whether King likes it or not, right. You know, it's like one of the biggest fucking films in history, in film history, definitely in the horror genre, right? So it's like, Flanagan had this weird task of like you can't, he wanted to do Stephen King's novel justice, but at the same time, he has to, like, you're making a film, you can't ignore the elephant in the room, so it's like, it's also a sequel to one of the greatest horror films of all time, which is very different from King's stories.
Yep.
So it's just like it's a hard thing to pull off, and like I think like he did a pretty good job. I don't know. Like I'm still not 100% sure how I feel about the movie. Like I think I liked it.
That's okay.
Kind of where I'm at. Like I think it was again like I'm just kind of I admire that like you know the task they had before him and that it turns out to be not a total train wreck. Like but also you know, for me as a big fan of the film The Shining, like this is a very weird sequel. I think it's just a completely different type of thing than at least the film of The Shining, I think.
Oh, like, very much.
There's way more plot going on and just a complete, almost different vibe, like tonally, than The Shining, even though Dr. Sleep, the film, like retains some of the music from The Shining. And, you know, of course, like, it has moments where it kind of dives back into The Shining, including, like, we go back to the Overlook Hotel on this.
Yes.
But it's just, like, I don't know. It's just so, because it's so different than The Shining. So, like, the basic setup here is it's, you know, it's been, like, what? The Shining came out in 1980, right? The film.
Yeah, around there.
So it's been like almost 40 years since that film came out, and now we're getting a sequel, and that's about how much time has passed in the story, too, here. It's like Danny, the little kid from The Shining, is an adult now, played by Ewan McGregor, mm-hmm. and he has, you know, substance abuse issues. He's like a heavy drinker, and, you know, his life is kind of like aimless and definitely impacted by what happened to him when he was a little kid, you know?
Yes.
And he begins making like pen pals with this girl who, and pen pals, I mean like psychic conversations with this young girl who also has The Shining and may have it like even better than him or better than most people that have it, like, you know, stronger abilities with
it. She's super strong in Shine.
And then meanwhile you have these bad guys out there roaming around. It's like this fucking like caravan full of basically fucking like vampires who like basically inhale people's steam, they call it. And yeah, they especially so, like people who have The Shining.
Basically, right? Yes, basically, they inhale the shine that comes with people that shine, and they call it steam.
They call it steam.
Steam. Yeah. So when you die, you emit your essence, basically, and these vampire people have kind of, you know, come to the conclusion that pain and hardship creates the most pure of this steam. Yeah. Like everybody emits this steam, but the steam that helps them survive, like as these vampiric creatures, has to come from people that shine. So when pain and hardship happen, they are able to kind of suck that up and you know continue to live for a long time.
Yeah, and they are, I guess, like running low on the steam,
mm-hmm.
and they get a whiff of this girl that's out there who has, you know, real good steam, so that'll like set them good for a long while. If you got all that down, that's a little bit more than Haunted Hotel, you know, like it's just like
yeah.
it's I don't know, man, it's weird, and like I think I generally like most of what's going on here, but I think that like this group of like vampire things or whatever, I think they like they don't. I can't take them serious. They look silly to me. Like the whole thing, like especially the lead like kind of lead character among them, at least for us, Rose the Hat. I think she's kind of their leader, right?
She's their leader, yes.
Yeah, and it's played by Rebecca Ferguson, who's wearing like this fucking top hat the whole movie. She just, even if she didn't have the top hat, like they just look like this group of like hippies or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Yeah, I like the movie. I think it was
fun. Yeah.
The problem is I read the book. And it's a pretty big book. Like it's a, 600 page book or whatever. And everything is given way more room to breathe, right? Like, so you spend way more time with Rose and her group of like weirdly named.
The True Knot or something.
The True Knot. So like, you never even really kind of get this idea that like, yeah, oh, they show that, there's this group of them, Rose and Andy and Grandpa Flick and like a couple other ones, but you never really get to spend much time with them other than like to set them up as, oh, they're the bad guys.
I think they're a little confusing to me. Like, cause I'm like, okay, they don't have the Shining. They just feed on it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what the fuck are they? Cause like they pick up this girl that they add to their group at the beginning of the movie. And they call her a pusher because she's able to like suggest to people what to do.
Well, so they all have some sort of shine ability. So like Andy's
ability. Are you getting this from the movie or the book?
You get it from you kind of get it from the movie too. Like Andy is able to put people to sleep, right? Like that is like she is able to kind of like. Take over your mental state. The new girl is able to kind of like put you to sleep. The rest of them, they really don't go into what powers are, right? Like,
yeah, that's because I'm like, do they all have some sort of thing special about like?
So they do. Kinda... And that's the problem with adapting a 600 page book where you spend a lot of time with like. There's a reason that each of the characters has these weird names, right? Like. Grandpa Flick, like he is the oldest. Like, I guess that's an easy one to understand, but, and Rose the Hat because she wears the fucking hat. But the rest of them, you don't really kind of get to look at who they are. So you don't understand why, like, what their powers are and how they're going about doing this. Like, they all ended up in the True Knot because they were.
Special in some way.
Yeah, they were special. They were so like
recruited because they're fucking. They got something that
exactly. So yeah, I think at one point, and actually the film actually flat out states it. So, Crow Daddy, when they discover Abra, when Rose kind of like
knows their fucking Abra, names, she, dude. I'm sorry. Anyways, go ahead.
And they don't go into it. Like there's so much more in the book. But anyway, so like. When Rose kind of finally, like, she makes contact with Abra and, like, realizes there's this kid of, like, supreme power out there. And she alerts Crow Daddy of this. Like, one of the first things he says is, like, are we going to use her? Or are we going to, like, turn her?
Okay, yeah.
This is, like, so it's, like, that's kind of, like, the indication there that, like, they're recruiting people that can use this because they need people with these powers. But Rose, on the other hand, doesn't want somebody with that amount of power because it threatens her. But they don't really get into that in the movie.
Well, there's only so much you can do. I mean, this movie's fucking long to begin with, it's and that's
2.5 hours.
Yeah. That's one thing for me is I did feel the length on this one.
It's long,
but it's weird. It's like. Midsummer, probably about the same length. I didn't really feel the length on that in the theater. I was like into it, super into it the whole time. And here, like, I was engaged by the story enough. I'm just so interested, like, what the fuck is this? But like, it did feel long to me. Like, I'm like, god damn, this feels like it's fucking 3 hours long. Like,
and for me, it's like watching it after having read the book. It's like, and I get it. Like, yeah, you have to make. Concessions for
you know, got it,
adaptation. Yeah. Like you can't just fit everything in, but it's like And you lose so much nuance with, you know, the way they did it. And so it's like, it's fine. It works. And I think if you take it separately from, you know, as an adaptation of Stephen King's novel, it works, especially I think the ending portion of it, like the last 35 or so minutes, which is completely different than the book.
It would have to be. Yeah. that's like what I knew going in. Cause I'm like, well, I think they came up with a good compromise. Like, and a lot of people say that, like, oh, once it gets to the last half hour, which it's not a big spoiler, but I'll just say it, like, the last half hour takes place in the Overlook Hotel. That has to be different because the Overlook Hotel doesn't exist in the book of Dr. Sleep,
right?
So, anymore.
So in the book, like the final confrontation takes place at the Overlook in the book as well, but not in the hotel, just on the grounds, because the Overlook is gone. Like,
it is now
a campground. That's
kind of surprising to me because I'm like, I thought that the film had a pretty thin excuse for why we're moving back to the Overlook at the end. Like, I was happy to go there, and
they don't really explain why.
They do. They say that, like, they give a reasoning. I don't want to, like, spoil it.
They do, but I think it's, like, okay. it's a bit flimsy. So,
yeah, exactly.
Whereas...
The book, it's better to explain
exactly. Like, there's more of a reason. Like, the actual Overlook has, like, the location of the Overlook has meaning. It has purpose to both the True Knot and to Danny. There are other things that are just so cool too that from the book that just had to get cut because you can't do them. And it's just unfortunate because it's like, I just see, like, what could have been, and in a way it kind of, like, you know, diminished what this ultimately was, which was a fairly successful sequel to an excellent film.
Yeah, it's just again weird for me because it's just so, like, it's hard for me to, like, separate it in my head, like. I just feel like you should have never touched The Shining, and there should never have been any more. And it just feels wrong and weird and different. But then also, like, I think that they did a good job doing, like, its own kind of story.
Yeah, it's like even the book, right? Like the novel, which I think is very well. You know, it's an excellent sequel to King's novel of The Shining. You know, it is its own thing. It is very different. It does not go for that same vibe that he did with, you know, his original novel. And so this one had to be different, but I don't think you could, like, I think if they had tried to recapture The Shining, it just would have been a joke, a complete nonsensical joke.
I don't know. Yeah. Again, I wouldn't want to see that either. You know what I mean? Like, I just shouldn't touch it, man. Like, I didn't want anymore, but again, I'm like, well, this is respectful enough as its own thing. Like, if you could kind of separate it as its own thing, it's like a different type of horror, like a different type of horror movie than The Shining. It's pretty good, and it's like, it is interesting to see what Danny, like, how it affected his life, and the fan service shit at the end, like, when they go back to the hotel, a lot of people will be like, that's where the movie starts to suck. Like, I was into it. I was like, it's cool to see
fun.
Like, these locations again. And, like,
honestly, though, going in, that's where I thought, like, and having read the book, I'm like, watching the trailers, I'm like, why are we going back to the fucking hotel? And, like, but it makes sense being as, like, it is a sequel to the movie. But I like when they go back there. I think it mostly works. It's a little fan servicey, but it's fun.
My favorite part of the movie occurs in this part near the end, and it's like the big, like, I'm trying not to spoil it, but just like, there was one part in this whole movie that really made me light up, and it was like, oh, aha! And it has to do with, like, them trying to fight the caravan people. I don't know if you know where I'm aiming with that, but I really liked kind of, like, how they used something that they set up very early on in the film as, like, a way to fight them.
Oh, you're talking about the Trunks?
Yes. Yeah. I like that part. I was really like, it made me light up. Like, I was like nudging my girlfriend, like, oh my God, you know, like that was really cool. Like, they, you know, that came back, and like the way they use that. I liked it. Like, I thought that was cool.
It was a cool use of that. Yeah.
One other thing, like, we get to see all the characters from The Shining, but interestingly, like, they're just played by, like, new actors who they, like, try to make look like the characters from The Shining. What did you think of that?
It was weird. Like, actually, I don't think it's weird in one particular instance.
I thought they did good, and I know which one you're talking about, and I thought he did good.
He's all right. Like it was just like it felt off, which maybe it's supposed to feel off, right? Like, should be this feeling of there should be this unsettling feeling when you're watching it.
But also, I mean, this is me making an excuse for it, but like, I kind of could also look at it as like, well, it's his memories of what his parents look like. He hasn't seen them in 40 fucking years.
Right.
You know, so maybe, you know, I'm giving an excuse to it. I think they do a pretty good job of like making them look like the actors and like giving them like some of the vocal, you know, like,
yes,
you get people that play both of his parents, and like they both like do, like, they don't do like the guy who plays Jack Nicholson, he doesn't do like an impersonation per se, but it's like his interpretation of that type of acting, you know, like it's
right.
Like, he's not doing Jack Nicholson, but he's doing what Jack Nicholson was trying to do with that role. You know, like the weird, creepy stare and the way like his eyebrows are and shit. Like, who, like the guy who plays Jack Torrance or whatever is Henry Thomas, the kid from E.T.
Really?
Yeah. Who, like, he was in Flanagan's The Haunting of Hill House. He played like the dad on that.
All right. Well, that makes a little more sense than like, because there, you know, you see scenes of him in the, you know, you see him at the bar, and I think that part worked fine. Then you actually see him like in the flashbacks, and it's like, did they like do a CG version of Nicholson? Like, because it looked weird, like weirdly close, right?
Cause yeah.
He's doing a pretty good performance of it.
Yeah.
But it just felt a little off to me, but it probably, you're probably right. Like, it's more a, you know, it was all in Danny's head. So,
I mean, that's one way to excuse it, I guess. But I was fine with all that. Like, you can't have digital de-aging and like digital characters and everything. Like, this is the way it had to always be done before. Although there's very few movies that have had sequels 40 years later, you know, like, film is still relatively young. Like, we're in this, like, this era we're in now is like a, kind of a first of its kind where like we're nostalgic, where Hollywood is mining the nostalgia we had for stuff from like the 70s and 80s and shit. It's like, they weren't really doing that back then because film had not been around that long. And you know what I mean? Like, it's interesting. It's weird.
Yes.
And I guess that's how I would describe Dr. Sleep. It's interesting. It's weird. It's I think overall pretty successful. It's just, you know, you gotta divorce some of your feelings about The Shining or the novels or like you just kind of.
Yeah, it has to look at it as its own thing, and also look at it as its own thing outside of The Shining too. Like,
yeah.
Cause if you're going and expecting more of Kubrick's, you know, one of his masterpieces, then you're going to come away disappointed. But if you can go in with kind of an open mind, this is an interesting horror film.
Yeah. I think I generally liked it. I'm going to give it 3 stars, Chris.
That's where I'm at with it too.
Too bad it bombed at the box office. Crazily bombed.
It I am. It is very weird that it hit such a weird point. Like, they were expecting way more out of it. But also, like, absolutely surprised by like people calling it the best horror film of the year. I am dumbfounded by that.
It's just, to me, it's like, I admire it for not being a total train wreck, honestly. Like, that's kind of where I land on it.
Yeah. It's a decent film. It's good. That's it, though.
No, and it's kind of neat to see these characters again, like, years later, and it's neat to go back to the Overlook as it's inexplicably just been sitting there empty for fucking ever. But yeah, I got destroyed at the box office. Like, it did terrible, and it even came in second place to a movie I didn't think anyone was looking forward to, which is our next film, which you went and saw.
I did. I didn't, like, this was not something that I was planning on going to see, but I needed a mental break the other day. And
did Midway provide a mental break?
Sure.
Turned my brain all the way out. No, I mean, yeah. I actually don't know anything about it, whether it's good or not. I wasn't looking forward to it.
Yeah, I wasn't either. Like, I don't hate Roland Emmerich.
I didn't even know that.
Yeah, he directed it. Yeah, he's done some movies I actually really like the original Independence Day.
Yeah.
I like The Day After Tomorrow.
2012.
Yeah, like he has made some fun movies. White House Down, like, he's made decent films, right? Like,
they're fun. They're dumb.
The Patriot, like, yeah, they're not like, you know, deep films. Midway is it's a historical retelling of the Battle of Midway and the events that led up to it, starting with Pearl Harbor. First off, I think that Pearl Harbor, the movie by Michael Bay, is better than this.
Oh, boy.
And that's not a great movie, but no. just in terms of, like, the, you know, in terms of how kind of, like, depicted in that, I think Michael Bay does a better job, and that movie came out 18 years ago. it's not a good movie. It's a super long film, and this definitely undercuts that. This has star power behind it, like Woody Harrelson's in it, and Patrick Wilson, Luke Evans, and Dennis Quaid, and Aaron Eckhart. And this has a who's who of people in this film, but it's kind of like weirdly disjointed in the way it's presented. I don't think that the action scenes are great. Like, I think the attack on Pearl Harbor that is displayed in this, it pales in comparison to what Michael Bay did in his film,
which was like, God, how long ago? Like almost 20 years ago,
almost 20 years ago. Like, this just looks weirdly CG in points, which, I mean, I get why you would do that, but it just doesn't feel natural. And then a lot of it is spent with you don't spend enough time with the characters to really get to know them. They're just kind of like archetypes. And the ones you do get to spend time with, I feel like, so this guy, Dick Best, is a pilot, played by Ed Skrein. I don't really know what else he has been in.
He's been in a bunch of stuff, but
yeah, I've seen him before.
Yeah.
Like he's that guy, right? He's the guy, like, you've seen this guy before, but
was he in Deadpool? Is that who I'm thinking of?
Like, he was, yep.
Yeah. He plays like a villain in that.
Mm-hmm.
Kind of like a blank face.
Yep.
I don't know.
And I just wanted to punch him the entire time I'm watching this movie.
I don't love him. I'm not a big fan of him.
He's kind of a dick. Like,
yeah.
Which is funny because his name is Dick in this movie. I mean, you're supposed to get this idea that he is You know, he's this awesome pilot that loves his wife and his daughter, but the dude just comes off as like an asshole that puts other people at risk. And in fact, at one point, like that comes up, and like, why isn't he running his own squadron? And like, hey, like he's not trustworthy. Like people don't trust him to bring them home safe. Like he's a fucking hothead. And so you're kind of like left with him for most of the film as the guy that you're supposed to kind of like attach to. And I just couldn't, just did not work. So none of the emotional beats that it tries to run with him work for me. And the rest of it is just kind of like by the numbers of like, this is what happened, right? Like Patrick Wilson's character plays this guy, Edwin Layden, who was a intelligence officer. He's giving information to Woody Harrelson's character, Chester Nimitz, who is in charge of the Pacific Fleet. And like the mainland intelligence is like coming up with different stuff and trying to, you know, get them to do different things with the remaining ships that Nimitz has in the Pacific. And if they had done that, like we would have been fucked. We would have lost Midway, which was, you know, by the Marshall Islands or whatever. And that would have been a foothold to them for then the Japanese to take, you know, Hawaii back from there, invade the West Coast of the US. Instead they follow, you know, Layton's, his intelligence that he's getting from his team of, you know, code crackers. And, you know, we were able to win Midway through some like heroics, but like none of it feels like super cool here. Like I feel that that's what they're going for, is like this big bombastic, like, you know, hey, like these are the heroes that saved us. And they keep cutting back and forth between like what's going on in the US side and the Japanese side. And I just couldn't get in with any of them. It's fine. The movie's fine. but it doesn't look great. It doesn't, like, it sounds kind of what you would expect from like a 50s war movie. So like it has that going for it, I guess, but none of the rest of it kind of really worked for me. And I'm like, the entire time I'm thinking, that Pearl Harbor scene.
Somehow Michael Bay did this better.
Yeah. Shit. Like,
quick aside, have you seen the trailer for that new Michael Bay movie that's coming out?
No.
It's called Six Underground, and it comes to Netflix. It stars Ryan Reynolds, and it's coming straight to Netflix.
Oh, I did. Is that the one he plays like a spy or something?
I think. I don't know. Like, the trailer makes it look really, really ridiculous and fun. Like, I'm actually excited for it.
Yes. It's like he has like a bunch of people he's working with, a crew or something. Yeah.
Maybe. Yeah. Like, they're in a car. In the trailer, anyways, like they're in a car, and it's just like, I don't know, dude. You got to see the trailer for it's called Six Underground. Yep. Check it out.
And it comes out next month. So
yeah. Anyways, back to Midway. Yeah,
nothing about Midway was like, oh yeah, that's awesome.
Yeah.
Like, and like I feel that they you know, they did it right by releasing Veterans Day. Because when I saw it, that's who was fucking in the theater with me.
Yeah, I was gonna say, that's the only explanation, but it's like, even then, I'm like, how did they know it was like Dr. Sleep was advertised way more,
yep,
than Midway, at least to me. Like, every time I went to the theater, I saw Dr. Sleep trailers. Midway, yeah, you'd see one here and there, and you'd like forget when it was coming out because
I didn't even know it was coming out last weekend. Yeah. It just so happened that it beat out Dr. Sleep, and I needed something to do in the middle of this week. So
the lesson for Dr. Sleep and Midway is that timing is important. Cause again, Dr. Sleep came out like a week after Halloween. Kind of doesn't make sense to me. And, Midway came out right at the perfect time, apparently, to win the box office for that weekend. It just kind of blows me away that happened, but
yeah. So I can't. I'm not gonna shit on Midway. It's fine. Like, I think it's a low tier 3-star movie. But I wouldn't recommend going out to see it. It's one of those things that, like, hey, if it happens to be on Netflix, or, you know, if you have cable and it happens to be on, like, one of those stations that you're flipping through, maybe watch it then. It's nothing special.
Yeah. So, rating?
3 stars.
Basically. All right, we're going to do 2 super quick reviews before we end. Because I don't think there's a ton to really say about... Well, I can't say much for the one I'm going to end it with, but before that, there's a new film called Haunt.
Mm-hmm.
It is written and directed by Scott Beck and Brian Woods, who I guess were the writers of A Quiet Place.
Okay. And
they directed this film, which is produced by Eli Roth. Yeah.
And, I did know that. I knew Roth was attached to this.
And pretty basic premise to this. It's Halloween night, Carbondale, Illinois, college town. And these college students decide to go to a extreme haunted house, and fucked up shit starts happening once they get in there. And this is like a subgenre in horror that I really enjoy. Like, there's that movie, I think it came out last year, called Hellfest, which I don't think you liked that much, but I really dug it.
Yeah, I didn't love it, but it was fine.
I enjoyed that one. I've been meaning actually to get that on Blu-ray.
That's a cool ending.
Yeah, it does, yeah. The Funhouse, which I just recently rewatched in October. You know, remember that old Toby Hooper mm-hmm. movie?
Yep.
I just dig shit that takes place in, like, a carnival or amusement park and ends up inside of an attraction, like a funhouse type attraction. Here, it's an extreme haunted house, and it's, like, that same idea, though, of, like, how much of what's happening here is, like, you know, it's just regular haunted house shit versus, are these people gonna get killed? And of course, because it's a horror movie, like, the people that run the haunted house are, like, evil and really trying to fucking kill these kids.
Yeah.
That's kind of basically, like, there's not a whole lot more to it. That's really it. Yeah. But I think there's some good kills. I think the bad guys have a cool look to them. Like, they all have, like, different, like, costumes and masks, which, you know, look like a cheapo kind of haunted house masks. But, I don't know. It's just, like, a cool look. Like, it gives everything a cool look. Like, the haunted house and the guys running around in these costumes has a cool look. And then when they take their masks off, they're even freakier looking, I think. But that's kind of it. Like, I don't know if I have much more to say. Like, there's not a lot of plot outside of that. They try to do a little bit with the main character, like something about how she has a dark past where her, like, dad was abusive.
Yeah, which I think they just tie that in.
But they don't, like, ever, like, even by the end of the movie, I'm like, is her mom dead? Like, they don't, like, does she live with her dad? Like, what is the situation there now? I don't think they ever explain that. She also has, like, this boyfriend who, like,
abusive and
seems like obsessive and possibly abusive and, like, controlling, and that kind of goes nowhere. Like, that doesn't amount to much. Anyways, no, so
it's like, I mean, this movie isn't long to begin with, and that somehow adds, like, another 10 minutes to the film.
Yeah, and it doesn't, like, I'm like, what are we doing with this? But just overall, I think it's a fun time, and, like, I enjoyed it. It's something I could see watching again, too, because it's got that Halloween vibe to it. Like, I like, you know, I like, one, the vibe of it being inside a haunted house, and two, like, it does have, like, that Halloween night vibe with, like, all the kids are wearing costumes and they're at a Halloween party at the beginning.
Yeah, I think one thing that really works for it is that, you know, aside from, like, the weird, you know, ancillary side story stuff about, you know, the main character's dark past and her boyfriend, the people that are in this group that go into the house are kind of fun. Like,
they're likable, right?
Like, yeah, they're not assholes. Like, I mean, they have their asshole moments. Like, they'll make, like, an asshole comment or something, but you don't hate them. So
no.
Like, when bad shit happens to them, you kind of feel a little bad.
They're like, I really like the one guy who was, like, the human centipede costume. Like, he just, yeah, like, I don't know. Like, I like, like, They weren't like badly written, annoying teenage or whatever, you know, college characters. Like
they're fine.
People that you would maybe hang out with, actually. Like, they're not terrible people.
It's like, hey, these guys don't suck.
But yeah, I don't really have much else to say about it other than, like, I'd say it's worth a rental if you're a horror fan. I know we're, like, kind of past the season, but does that season ever really end for horror fans?
No.
Or if you have Shudder, it's exclusive on there, as, you know, streaming for free on there. I give it 3 stars and say check it out.
All right. That's where I'm at with it, too.
So. Yeah. Just one last thing before we go, because I said I would talk about it this week. Netflix documentary called Tell Me Who I Am, and it tells the story of these twin brothers who one of them gets in a really bad motorcycle accident, and he comes out of it with no memory, like complete amnesia, like his memory's completely wiped. The only thing he really remembers is his brother's name. And his twin brother, it's a story. They're like in their 50s now, and this happened when they were like teenagers. And it's a story of how his brother kind of like, you know, his brother that was not involved in the accident kind of like helped him relearn everything, like including like, you know, who are your parents? Like, what was your childhood like? What did we do? Like, you know what I mean? Like, literally, he had nothing. And it's just kind of fascinating. It's a fascinating story about like how much your memory kind of shapes you, and then like what you would do if you lost that, and the fact that it's a true story. You know, it's like kind of crazy. The whole documentary is just really these two brothers talking to the camera with like some recreations of what they're talking about. You know,
right?
That's kind of it. But and I can't say any more. But like, there's more to it than what I'm saying. Just put it that way. And the story they tell goes some really fucking wild, crazy places. I don't want to say more than that because I don't want to spoil it. It's best if you found out on your own. I would say don't even watch a trailer. I'd say if the premise sounds interesting to you, check out Tell Me Who I Am on Netflix. Worth it if you're into documentaries. I'm going to give it 4 stars.
Nice.
And we'll leave it at that. Next week, I might go see Ford versus Ferrari. We'll see.
Yeah, I might see that too. Like, that's the only real, it's the only one I'm really interested in. So,
yeah, I'm not even really interested in it, but my girlfriend wants to see it, so I'm like, okay, that's fine.
I don't know if I care about the story, but
I like the actors.
Seems like
a big movie, you know.
Matt Damon and Christian Bale together look like they're having fun. So.
Big director too. I can't think of his name right now. It's the guy who did Logan. So
James Mangold.
Yep. So I'll maybe have that. I'm sure we'll have other stuff too.
Yeah,
so
we'll watch something. Week. All right.
Peace.
Movie dudes.